Well, greetings once again, everyone. It is once again Thursday. And if it's Thursday, that must mean it is A2A time here in Turdville. And today's Access to Access guest is the one and only James Turk. Legendary James Turk. You like that, James? Legendary? Is that good?
Yeah, I don't know about that, but I try my best.
It usually means you're getting older if somebody calls you legendary, so I apologize for that.
Okay.
But if you're not familiar with James, he's founder of GoldMoney.com. He's still a director at Gold Money Incorporated. He's an author. The latest book that he has out came out about a year ago, and it is a must read. If you don't already have it, you'll see an ad for it on this podcast page called The Money Bubble, What to Do Before It Pops, co-authored with John Rubino. And again, I urge you, if you don't already have a copy, it is as relevant today as it was a few months back, a must read. So James, thank you for taking time here to join us this morning.
Yeah, it's always great to speak with you, Craig, and I'm happy to be here.
Let's, before we get into the global financial situation, because there's so much going on, you had the merger last year with BitGold. Can you give everybody just a brief update of how that has gone and where that is going forward?
Yeah, I guess the best way to describe it is that, all of my expectations and hopes
as soon as James
are being
talking,
realized.
Are you back, James?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're back now. Go ahead.
Okay. I guess we had a internet moment there. Now, I was saying, I guess the best way to describe it is all of my expectations and my hopes are all being realized. I saw the transaction as a 1+1=3 opportunity. You know, we both were bringing something to the table, in that the sum of the two parts, the whole was greater than the sum of the two parts, and it's really working out that way. We've done a lot. There's still a lot on the table. As with any new company, it's just a question of time and resources and rolling out the new products. But we're seeing that. In fact, we just announced today some upgrades to the Gold Money site, and you've probably been following the different press releases and announcements and upgrades and changes and new products that we're doing with the BitGold site. So, we continue to operate the two companies, BitGold.com and GoldMoney.com, but, as we were expecting to happen, over time they're going to become more and more closely interrelated, and that process is still very much underway.
I get asked all the time about international storage. We've got our sponsors on our site for people that, just want to buy some coins and put them in their safe and bury them in the river and all that kind of stuff. But I get asked all the time about big dollar stuff and international storage. And I tell people all the time, why do you want to jack around with any of these other places? Just go to Gold Money. I mean, James, you know good people like Alistair that work there. I mean, I just think it's terrific. One thing I've been curious about, I remember asking this the last time we spoke, is the kind of the interlinking between your gold money, gold you have in storage, and whether you can move it back and forth to BitGold. Is that still underway? Is that still being kind of worked on?
It's still being worked on. It's not yet underway, but that ultimately is something that we're moving toward, to have a greater interconnectivity between the two companies, to provide more convenience and more opportunities, more different products, to customers in both different companies.
Again, think about this. This is why I'm such a proponent of this BitGold idea, and I really think it's going to take off, because, again, we're all forced to save in fiat currency. You work, you get paid, whatever you have left after your expenses or your savings, and you save in this fiat currency that is always being devalued, and it doesn't make any
sense. Yeah,
go ahead, James.
It doesn't make any sense, and, it's really a good point that you're raising, because what you really have to do is when you're looking at your portfolio, your accumulated wealth, you really have three components to it. You have your cash, which you need for your day-to-day requirements and just general liquidity. That liquidity is necessary, to make an investment or to purchase a consumer good, or you take some of the liquidity and put it into the second component, which is your savings. It's near liquidity, but it's savings. It's not an investment. It's something where you're taking your purchasing power and putting it in the savings category, for accumulating capital to buy a home or to purchase a car or to maybe start a company 3 to 5 years down the road. What you want to do when you're saving money is you don't want to put it at risk. You just want to preserve that purchasing power for a future point in time. And then the third component of your portfolio, of course, is your investments. And your investments are where you actually take your money and put it at risk in order to try to generate some kind of rate of return. Now, a lot of people think that gold is an investment, but it's not. Gold is money. So it goes into the first part of your portfolio, which is your cash component. You have to compare gold versus what other currencies are doing. And in order to preserve your purchasing power, you want to be in the strongest currency. And over the last 15 years, in dollar terms, you know, gold has risen 12% per annum, year after year on average, in terms of the U.S. dollar. In fact, it's risen nearly double digits or double digits on average every year against all of the world's major currencies. So it is doing what money's supposed to do. It's preserving purchasing power. And gold is also the type of money that you want to save. Gold is not an investment because it doesn't generate cash flow. It just like a stack of $100 bills is not an investment. It doesn't generate cash flow. That's their money. The only way that you can use that is to buy a consumer good or to make an investment. And when you're making that investment, you're putting your money at risk. And that's, you know, not for everybody. Some people want to make investments, some people don't, but you have to have the ability to save money, and gold is the ideal way to save money. From a long-term point of view.
No question about it. And, you know, just this morning on the site, I posted a chart of gold in Russian rubles. And, you know, we get so transfixed on my side and financial media, everybody wants to look at the dollar price, you know, and that's the one that is so aggressively managed in terms of the dollar as reserve currency and the confidence game and everything else. But gosh, try telling it to a Russian or a Brazilian citizen or an Indian citizen or even a Canadian or Australian citizen. About how, you know, the value of gold in their currency and how it's done to protect their purchasing power.
Yeah, you know, I was just looking at these tables that I do every year to see how gold is done in a variety of different currencies. From 2001 to 2015, gold has been up every year except three in terms of dollars. And if you add up all of those returns, both positive and negative, it's 10.7% average. In ruble, it's 18.0%. The euro is 9.7%, the British pound 11.1%, South African rand 16.9%, year after year after year. So, you know, again, think of gold as money. Think of it as, do I want to hold gold? Do I want to hold dollars? Do I want to hold Swiss francs? Do I want to save Swiss francs? Do I want to save gold or save dollars? And you'll see that, you know, gold is the ideal form of money.
Well, and that's mainly why I wanted to have you on. We've got to get that message through as much as we can. And then there's this underlying concern about how much gold is there really available? You being, you know, an expert in the field, James, you've been around and doing this for quite some time. You're in London. Your boots on the ground in London. You have contacts there. You know how the LBMA operates. We're at this situation now where all of this gold continues to flow from the west to the east. And many of us here just kind of scratch our furry heads wondering, well, you know, how in the heck did, where's this gold coming from? You know, we see the export numbers out of the US, the export numbers out of the UK, into Switzerland, out of Switzerland, into Hong Kong, into China. It just announced yesterday, the Russians accumulated more than 200 metric tons last year on top of what's going on in China and India. We keep hearing these anecdotal stories about the bullion banks really being stressed, existing off of flow, not off of stock, that their vaults are empty, that the gold that they've had, that they've existed off of, that's been leased to them and hypothecated and rehypothecated, that it's all getting thin. I know this is a lengthy question, but I want to turn it over to you just to, if you could share with us what you've observed these last, you know, few months and what you think the situation is on the ground in London.
Yeah. What you're hearing is, I think, a pretty accurate representation. You know, the gold continues to flow out of here to Switzerland, principally in order to turn it into kilo bars, because the typical storage here in London is 400-ounce bars. Mm-hmm. So that the demand in Asia is principally kilo bars, so it has to be refined. There are no refineries in the UK anymore. So it goes to Switzerland, and then it ultimately goes to Asia. But you know, they're stressing the system, and we see this in a couple of different ways. We see this in backwardation. I mean, there was a $7 backwardation on the COMEX at the end of December, on the last day of the month. It's just an indication that how tight the physical markets are. They're trying to alleviate this backwardation, and we see it, for example, that every month last year, gold has come out of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, shipped over to Europe, where it's refined and ultimately shipped over to Asia. So the question really is, Craig, how long can it go on? And we can't predict it. It's gone on longer than I suspected or expected, but they continue to maintain this. Are they going to do it until the vaults are empty, or are the vaults almost empty already anyway? We just don't know, because the central banks just don't give you honest accounting as to how much physical metal they have in the vault versus how much they've already got out in loan. But I'd like to compare this going back to March of 1968. It was the exact same situation. You know, the U.S. government was trying to keep the gold price at $35 an ounce. They just hoarded over 10,000 tons of gold from Fort Knox, shipping it from the States back to Europe, in order to try to keep the gold price at $35 an ounce, until eventually, in March of 1968, President Johnson at the time threw in the towel, and they said the London Gold Pool fell apart, mm-hmm. which was a cartel of central banks, and you started to see a two-tiered gold market, which was the official price which central banks transacted amongst themselves at $35 an ounce, and then you saw the free market price, which was, of course, above that price, and that started the bull market that went on for the next 12 years until 1980. We're seeing a similar type of thing today, in the sense that there's a two-tiered market, in that you have a physical market and you have a paper market, and the two are becoming more and more separated, and we're seeing that in terms of the backwardation and the way the COMEX is trading, and the fact that the COMEX stocks, for all practical purposes, have been basically taken. Mm-hmm. And used up. You know, in a COMEX, to explain this point, there are two levels of stocks. You have what's called registered, and you have what's called eligible. The registered is what's available for immediate delivery, and that's near record lows.
Yep.
You also have the eligible, but there's no guarantee that people who are storing eligible gold have any intention whatever to deliver it at anything close to present prices. You know, you have to assume at these levels, those eligible holders are strong hands, and they're going to hold out for a much higher price before they even think about delivering onto the COMEX. So, you know, all of these things taken together suggest that, yes, the market is stressed, but unfortunately, we just can't predict when that March of 1968 event is going to occur, when central banks throw in the towel. But it will occur, because we know that markets don't like abnormal situations, and we are in an abnormal situation. It has to return to normality. And because you can't increase the supply of gold overnight with a magic wand or a bookkeeping entry, when people want physical metal, it comes out of the ground or it comes from existing stocks. And that basically means is the way to adjust it is with a much higher gold price than what we're seeing today.
Yeah, wait till all of the paper holders of the GLD and the unallocated accounts and the warehouse receipts, when the music stops and they all come asking for the same ounce of gold, it's going to be a rather interesting moment.
Yeah, it's going to be like a Lehman moment.
Yeah.
When all of those guys who are holding derivatives that Lehman was guaranteeing, and they say, give us our money, and Lehman couldn't. But this is going to be different, because what happened in 2008 is the Federal Reserve stepped in and said, okay, we'll just create dollars with the U.S. government, and it's a bookkeeping entry, and we'll give you the dollars and so that Lehman's obligations are fulfilled. But where are you going to get the gold?
Right.
You can't create it out of thin air like you can create dollars out of thin air. So it's going to be unbelievable when this finally, comes to its logical and natural conclusion. And if you go back and look at monetary history, that's what all the crises in monetary history are about. It starts with a paper crisis where people lose faith in the paper, or they lose faith in the banks. Then they go into gold, and that's when the system falls apart, because there's just never enough gold given all of the hypothecation, fractional reserve banking, and everything else that's played around with gold.
Well, and that brings up, the next question before we get to some of the listener questions that I wanted to ask you about, because, again, you've got your feet on the ground there in Europe, in London, and so you're privy to all the headlines that come out of Europe. I'm watching closely, James, the situation at Deutsche Bank. That's a bullion bank as well. I mean, a rather significant one. Yet they appear to be counterparty to a lot of different derivatives, especially commodity derivatives. And their stock is now at essentially all-time lows, breaking down below even how low it got in 2008 and 2009. There are other banks that are in trouble. In fact, it would seem like the entire European banking structure is kind of held together with baling wire and chewing gum. What are you seeing here as we begin 2016? Are you sensing that we're really kind of at the edge of the abyss and looking in?
I think there's a very high probability of a Lehman type of event, a banking crisis, occurring sometime during 2016, if not 2016, definitely by 2017, simply because the banks are still way over leveraged and they've got a lot of bad loans. And as economic activity is just barely creeping along, more and more loans are becoming bad. Right now, in Europe, there is 1 trillion euros of non-performing loans. In other words, these are loans that are bad loans in the sense that they're not meeting interest payments or principal repayments, and mean that they're being worked out by the bank with the borrower to try to enable the bank to get its money back. 1 trillion. I think the aggregate capital of all of the European banks is probably not more than 100 billion in euros. So you've got non-performing loans far greater than the amount of bank capital. What that basically means is that the banks are insolvent, but they remain open. In other words, they're still liquid because people aren't paying attention. They only pay attention, as occurred back here in 2007 in the UK, when Northern Rock went under. People were lining up trying to get their money back, but that's too late. You want to be able to anticipate, and right now one has to reasonably conclude that the banks are insolvent. What's worse, why put your money in a bank when you're not earning any interest to offset the risk? It just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So you have to look for alternatives, and of course, gold and silver are logical alternatives to preserve your capital, preserve your purchasing power.
Well, and that Western demand is the one missing piece. You know, I've long suggested now for 3 years, that's the key to the downtrend, why the banks are so strictly enforcing it, is because if they can keep price headed down, at least in dollars, then they can greatly control Western sentiment. And if you can keep sentiment down, you'll keep physical demand down. And if all of a sudden everybody in the West, the banks start to fail, and the stock market goes down, if all of a sudden there's physical demand out of the West that matches that in the East, that may be the final piece of the puzzle to break.
Yeah, and you know, right now you're seeing the physical demand in the West at some of the coin demand. There hasn't been a lot of institutional demand because most institutions in the West don't really understand gold.
Right.
But even if they did, the thing about the gold market, it's very easy to sell institutional-sized transactions, but it's very difficult to buy institutional-sized transactions. Mm-hmm. That's just the nature of gold. But when push comes to shove and you start getting institutions in there trying to buy along with everybody else, there's the only alternative is for a much higher gold price.
Yep, no doubt about
it. And silver too, for that matter, Craig.
Yep. All right, I've got a couple of questions already in queue, and this is the point where if you're listening live and you have a question you'd like to ask Mr. Turk, you click the questions tab in your control panel and type it in, and I will relay it to him. So as those questions accumulate, I've got one that was emailed to me, James, and it comes from a guy by the name of Gabe. And Gabe wants to know if you envision what he calls an inflection point sometime this year, a severe accumulation of financial pressure from either global or domestic that causes the U.S. dollar to capitulate and lose its world reserve status, which is an eventuality. We just don't know when it's going to happen. Do you see this as a gradual loss of confidence and a slow decline in the dollar's value, or an outright and sudden devolve? Because some have suggested a 30 to 40% devaluation of the dollar when this happens. How do you see this playing out?
Yeah, you know, that's really a good question, and it's one that I think a lot about. And I don't think it's going to be either of those alternatives. I think you're going to see the U.S. government impose capital controls. And what I mean by that is that they will have $2. They'll have a domestic dollar, and then they'll have the dollars that are already outside the United States, held in banks around the world or held by institutions around the world. typically they're called euro dollars, but they're not just in Europe, they're all over the place. Mm-hmm. And what will happen is that in order to control inflationary pressures within the United States, the Federal Reserve, the U.S. government, will impose a capital control so that dollars that are outside the United States cannot come back into the U.S. and be spent and raise the prices, you know, domestically within the United States.
Right.
What that would mean is that the international dollar would fall to a huge discount to the domestic dollar because you're impairing the usefulness of those dollars outside the United States. And I think that also has implications to this, to Gabe's question, that the international dollar will become less useful as the world's reserve currency, particularly given the fact that the Chinese yuan is becoming more and more important, particularly in Asia. And I think that the Chinese yuan will become the dominant international currency, trade currency in Asia. I don't, just as an aside to that question, we talk about the international, the dollar being the international reserve currency. It doesn't make sense to use the term reserve anymore. You know, the term reserve meant that you had gold in reserve so that in a crisis you could deliver gold to fulfill all of your dollar promises. You know, that doesn't apply anymore. Mm-hmm. So we really should be thinking just in terms of international trading currencies. You know, the dollar is the major international trading currency, but you see the competitive pressures coming from elsewhere, particularly from Asia. And my guess would be that the dollar's status as the international trading currency is going to diminish, particularly at that moment in time when you see capital controls imposed in the United States preventing dollars outside the U.S. from being spent within the U.S.
Really, what other choice do they have? You know, it's that what you've described is similar to what other analysts have said. Jim Willey's one of them that has talked about that for quite some time.
Well, they do have a choice. They do have a choice, Craig. They could recognize that they've been, for decades on the wrong path and go back to constitutional sound money.
Right.
But, you know, they're not going to do that. And the reason why they're not going to do that is nobody wants to be on the bridge when their ship goes down. And, you know, their ship is going to go down sooner than later. So what they do is they become more and more control-minded, more and more central planning, restricting freedoms, restricting capital movements in order to try to keep this ship from sinking. So absent the leadership, and the tough decisions that would be necessary to go back to constitutional money, and I don't see that happening, they're just going to try, as they say, kicking this can down the road, but the can's no longer a can. It's a two-ton boulder, and it's becoming harder and harder to keep the ship afloat. Just one other point in this regard. This is not the first time the country has been in this kind of predicament. In 1865, after the war was over and they had greenbacks being issued, there was a lot of financial and monetary turmoil then because there was no longer a link between the dollar and gold as required in the Constitution. So what Congress and the President did is they put together the Resumption Act in 1869 and said in 10 years' time, we're going to take all of this paper money and go back to a gold standard as required by the Constitution. So, I mean, if you wanted to plan for returning to gold, you could do it, but it requires political leadership, it requires foresight, and it requires abandoning all of these crazy, foolish policies, Keynesianism and everything else, that people think they can manage economy and control economies because they can't.
Yeah, yeah. And in the meantime, it's just going to get worse. And
yeah, they end up destroying things rather than making them better. And that's why, today under this fiat currency regime, the economies around the world are barely moving. If you go back to the late 1800s when we were on a gold standard and a sound monetary system, you saw annual growth 5, 6, 7% regularly year after year after year.
And like you said, it's hard to see how the U.S. is going to allow $18 trillion or maybe whatever the foreign held debt is, $9 trillion, all come washing back ashore here in the U.S., that they'll put up some barrier, they'll come up with some scheme to keep that from happening, and that's that kind of split dollar arrangement you're talking about. That seems to make the most sense.
Yeah, and there's another aspect of that too that everybody has to think about. We know there's a storm coming, so we just have to prepare for it. And you might be thinking to yourself, well, I don't have any dollars outside the United States, so I'm not going to be impacted by it. But what they might do is they might say, well, if you have dollars inside the United States, we're going to impose a foreign exchange control and you can't send them outside the United States. And what's worse, they're going to confiscate a pension plan or IRA or take 50% of it and say we need it because we're in a crisis. So what you really have to be doing is focusing on diversifying internationally. So it goes back to the point that we were talking about earlier. It does make sense to store some gold and store some silver in different vaults around the world just in case, we do go further and further in the wrong direction. You want to have options so that your ability to live at the standard to which you've become accustomed and to live without controls and restrictions. You might choose to leave the United States during a period of capital controls, but you can only do that if you've already got capital outside the United States.
That's right. That's right. All right. My first question from a listener comes from Mike, and this is kind of along the same lines of what we've been discussing, James. Mike says it's been discussed that the dollar is a safe haven and it will rise when other fiat currencies are falling. And we've seen major problems with the other currencies, and yet the dollar is about the same. So the question is, will just simply the euro going down be enough to inversely raise and support the dollar?
Yeah, it's another good question. We've seen that over the past 6 months or so. The problems over here in Europe are just unbelievable. And in an emotional knee-jerk reaction, people who are holding euros say, gosh, I got to get out of the euro. What am I going to do? Well, they buy the dollar. So they sell the euro, buy the dollar, and that causes the dollar to go up. Now, to answer the question, what economists describe this international monetary regime that we have at the moment, they call it floating currencies. And these currencies do bob up and down relative to one another from time to time, depending on what central banks are doing at any moment in time. So right now, what's been happening is this European Central Bank has been debasing the euro at a very rapid rate through its negative interest rates and QE and everything else that it's doing. And relative to the euro, the Federal Reserve has been fairly prudent. I mean, the total assets of the Federal Reserve have not increased for the past 18 months. They're stuck at 4.5 trillion. So they haven't been aggressively, printing new dollars. And in fact, the monetary base has even been contracting over the past several weeks as the Federal Reserve chose to raise interest rates, which is another indication that, to explain why the dollar is relatively strong compared to other currencies. But here's the key point. While these currencies float and bob up and down relative to each other, they're all sinking relative to gold. It goes back to those double-digit numbers that I've been talking about, where gold was in 2000 versus where gold is today in terms of its appreciation over that period of time. Gold's preserving purchasing power over long periods of time. National currencies are losing purchasing power over long periods of time, and that relationship is going to continue. Yes, you're going to get fluctuations in the gold price from time to time, as we've been seeing, but when looked over a longer period of time, gold is the best way, is the best money, to, and silver too, for that matter, to preserve your purchasing power. Stay away from national currencies because they get debased. You're not earning enough interest to offset the risk. And when you have a national currency, it's in a bank, and you may be in a bank which is insolvent.
And when we're stressing gold, again, we're talking physical gold, and even the gold at Bitgold is all physical gold, right? Stored away in vaults.
Yeah, it's all allocated in vaults of your choosing in different vault locations around the world.
Yep. Just so when we talk about gold, what the other factor that everybody needs to keep in mind is how many unallocated and paper alleged alchemized, if you will, gold there is out there compared to the real thing. So keep that in mind too.
Yeah, there's another thing to keep in mind too, Craig. It's that when you're looking at gold, don't just look at the price, or when you're looking at silver, don't just look at the price. Look at the price of goods and services in terms of gold. So, for example, crude oil prices have collapsed over the last 6 months. You're now down at one of historically low levels of crude oil prices in terms of gold. crude oil was in back in 1950, it was $1.17 a barrel. Even in 2000, as I recall, it was like $10 a barrel. Mm-hmm. Now we're down to $28 a barrel. But in gold terms, that barrel of crude oil, you're buying more crude oil with that ounce of gold than you've ever been able to do before in history. So you have to look at the goods and services that are important to you. And I always like to come back to this example of me as a young boy growing up in Ohio and remembering my parents driving the family car into the local gas station and filling up the car with two silver dollars. And, when silver was at $30, I was saying you could fill up the family car with the silver content of two silver dollars. And with silver down here at $14 and, gasoline at under $2, you can still fill up the family car with the silver content of two silver dollars. So you have to look at the prices of goods and services calculated in terms of gold or calculated in terms of silver to get a deeper understanding and appreciation of how important gold and silver are as money.
Yeah, no question. Excellent point. I've got two remaining questions in queue, and if anybody wants to add one, there's still time, but we're running out of time. And James, I want to thank you for your generous supply of time. I really appreciate it. Very helpful information you're giving us. The next question I have comes from Ted, and this is specific to gold money and big gold. If there is a banking crisis and the system, if you will, goes down, where banks, there's a bank holiday, I guess, or what we saw in Greece, where people are lined up to get their daily stipend or allowance out of an ATM. What type of effect will that have on gold money and big gold? I mean, are you outside of that system?
Yeah, you're completely outside of the system. When you have gold in gold money or in bit gold, you're outside of the system. The only impact it may have on the two companies is it may be more difficult for our customers to actually buy more gold if they're having problems wiring money through the banking system. Mm-hmm. But the gold that's already in BitGold and gold money are, outside of the banking system. And what we're trying to do is, not only is gold a form of savings, but gold can also be used as currency.
Right.
And what we're developing is what I call digital gold currency. Instead of using a gold coin and buying something and putting that coin down on the counter and walking away with some good, we're trying we are doing it because it's actually available now in BitGold. Use that gold as a form of currency,
right,
either clicking it from your account to someone else's account, using your mobile phone to do it, or using your MasterCard, your BitGold MasterCard, or your Gold Money MasterCard. Gold Money is doing one as well, but it's in beta. I've got my beta card, and it's going to be announced soon so that Gold Money customers will have a MasterCard as well.
Oh, fabulous.
What we're trying to do is to give people options so that if the banking system freezes up, they'll still be able to transact
right
with the gold that they've got in Gold Money and BitGold.
Right. Oh, geez, all the more reason. You got to be giving that a look. That just seems almost like prudent to have money there. Again, like any other insurance, like we talk about.
Yeah, exactly. The driving principle is you have to have your money someplace where it's safe. That's true regardless you're in safe times, good times, whatever. You want to know your money is safe. But you also want to know once it's safe that you can use it. We know in gold money and BitGold it's safe, and now we're also creating ways that you can use it too.
Here's the last question I have in queue, James, and it still deals with the dollar a little bit, a little more geopolitics, if you will. There's a lot of talk out there about the Saudis, who have been kind of the linchpin to this whole, let's call it the petrodollar is the common term, pricing energy, pricing crude oil in dollars to continue to create demand for dollars as part of the recycling system, if you will, for all the dollars abroad. A lot of talk, though, all of a sudden, especially in the last few weeks, about the instability in Saudi, instability of the House of Saud, and whether Saudi might depeg or at least begin using other currencies to price crude oil. So with that, I've added a lot to Larry's question for background, because Larry's question simply is, what happens to the U.S. dollar and gold when, if Saudi depegs?
Yeah. Well, remember that money or national currencies have a supply and demand just like any other good or service.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about the supply of dollars, the supply of euros. We look at M1, M2, and M3. We don't too often talk about demand for the dollar or the demand for the euro. But if the dollar becomes less useful, or if the Saudis choose to start being paid in Chinese yuan or euros instead of dollars, that means that the demand for the dollar will fall. And just like anything else, if the demand falls, it becomes less valuable, which means its purchasing power, which means its price goes down, which in terms of dollars means its purchasing power declines, and that means the price of gold will go up. So there is a lot of competition now and uncertainty for this international trading currency, and there is a lot of uncertainty about the dollar. So if the Saudis warm up to the Russians, in fact, they just did a deal with the Chinese as well. What was left undetermined is how the Saudis are going to pay the Chinese, but if the Chinese want, Chinese yuan, that means it's going to have a negative impact on the dollar. Which I guess more generally speaking, Craig, you always have to stay alert of what the geopolitics are, because the geopolitics these days can affect the currencies, because currencies are no longer neutral tools in commerce, with the exception of gold. They're no longer neutral tools in commerce. Governments are using currencies today as political weapons. And that's unfortunate, because when you do that to a currency, it disrupts the currency, disrupts commerce, and that in turn impacts the economy and people's standards of living.
Well, and you mentioned geopolitics. Let's knock over a couple of dominoes. There's obviously a heated state of affairs, if you will, between, let's say, Saudi and Iran, because of what the events have taken place there lately. Say over the next few months, year, or whatever, all of a sudden that warms up even more, and there is some revolutionary event or war within Saudi, and all of a sudden a new government takes place that isn't so U.S. friendly. And they all begin to price currency or the energy in something in anything in yuan and rubles and euros and whatever. That could, again, that finally could really place that pressure on the dollar that you talked about that might eventually force the capital controls and the two versions of the dollar and everything else we discussed about 15 minutes ago.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you have to remember that Saudi, it's producing 10 million barrels of oil a day. Worldwide demand is about 92 million barrels of oil a day. Any kind of disruption to that oil flow is going to create havoc in the global economy.
Yeah. Let me give you one more question. It just came in because I think it's a good one, and then we'll wrap up, James.
Okay.
A follow-up question from Ted. And Ted said, we're all aware of the derivative positions of the large banks. And they're all counterparties and parties to all these this different risk. And that the depositors are now creditors and could lose their deposits. You know how those rules have changed just in the last 12 months with the
Because
G20
of
did
bank
that.
bail-ins where the depositors are on the hook.
Right.
Yep.
So how do you feel about depositors of the Scott Trade, Ameritrade, Fidelity, those type of places? How would they make it out if there's a financial meltdown? You got any ideas there?
Yeah. I've never really analyzed it in detail, but most of the money that those guys have in their that they receive from customers, they in turn put it in the banks. So they're vulnerable as well. I wouldn't leave large deposits of cash anywhere, to be quite honest.
Good point.
And it keeps coming back to, why take the risk when you're not getting the interest to offset the risks of
Right.
doing that?
Yeah, exactly. Just out of
If I were
habit.
getting, yeah, if I was getting 10 or 12% interest on something, I'd have to think twice before I turn that down. But when you're getting nothing, why take the risk and get nothing in return?
Or if you're paying, for crying out loud, if you're paying money to store your money in a bank,
Yeah, negative interest rates.
what about the stock positions? Jim Sinclair often warns about getting, certificates while you can for your accumulated, for your equity positions, things like that. I mean, do you think those are at risk in a financial meltdown too?
Yeah, I haven't really looked at that to really give an answer one way or the other,
Okay.
but I guess it comes down to do what you need to do to sleep well at night. That's my basic guiding principle.
Yeah, no, I hear you there. Well, James, thank you. I mean, it's tremendously valuable information, and I'm just such a fan of what you've done and but what you continue to do. And you're such an advocate for all of us in the gold community. We wrap up here traditionally with what we call the final four, just four quick questions, kind of fun questions. You can usually answer with with a one word or maybe a quick sentence. And then as a way out, if you're ready, I'll lay the first one on you.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, you said you're in London, right? What is what's your favorite restaurant in London?
It's one that I've been going to since 1974, and it's changed a lot over the years. It's called Bill Bailey's Oyster Bar. When I first went there years ago, it was pretty much a rough pub with good food. But recently, it's been taken over by one of the top chefs, and it's become gentrified. It's still great food. So that's a great restaurant. If you are going with the family and just want, a lot of fun, there's a chain here that I like called Wagamama's. I spent,
Wagamama.
10 years in Asia, and so I love Asian food. It's a quick way to get good Asian food. There are a lot of restaurants. It's a chain, but it's very high quality food and good value for the money.
I like the sound of it too, Wagamama.
Wagamama. Yeah, they're all over the place.
All right, fair enough. Okay, question two. Will we see new highs in the S&P 500 or new highs in gold? What's going to happen first?
I think you got to say gold, but it depends what the Federal Reserve does. If the Federal Reserve come out and announces, QE4, and they really start pumping up the money supply, the S&P is closer to a high than gold is, so it might be that the S&P reaches a new high before gold does. On the other hand, if the Fed just keeps its existing policy, doesn't expand its balance sheet, I think you're going to see gold go higher simply because of people looking for safe havens.
Yep.
And in that case, the S&P may go nowhere.
All right. You mentioned crude earlier, it being down at heck, it was even under 28, both Brent and WTI yesterday. Just give me a number. How low is it going to go, James?
Well, it's not going to go lower than $5, and I say that for purpose because that's the wellhead price in Saudi Arabia. That's
Okay.
what it costs them to get, oil out of the ground. Obviously, from there, wellhead prices in a lot of other countries start going up. But what you're seeing now is because some of these oil producers are so over-leveraged and need the cash, they're going to sell regardless what they can get.
Yep.
But just as a practical matter, it looks to me that we've seen the capitulation in oil, or we're very, very close to it. So I maybe you got another dollar or two on the downside, but I think it's pretty much over in terms of the downside. That doesn't necessarily mean it's going to go straight back up. The big downside is finished. I think this is about the low, and
Okay.
that's probably true for commodities in general. They're without a doubt the cheapest asset class today.
Man, no doubt about that. All right, and finally, who is the next president of the United States?
I don't have a clue. It's still a long way away. A lot of things can change. I follow the polls just to see out of curiosity who's in the lead at any moment in time.
But you got to walk in, got to walk into one of those betting parlors in London today and place a couple of pounds on it. Who's it going to go on?
It depends on the economic activity, what happens in terms of the Hillary Clinton and some of the scandals that are coming up relating to her. But if I had a bet, I'd probably say I think the best chance is going to be Donald Trump.
Do you think he'll get a decent haircut at least for the inauguration? Oh, for crying out loud. We talk, you see all these pictures of him with his spray on tan. They had the orange revolution in Ukraine. Would that be an orange revolution here in the US? I don't know.
You gotta look at the underlying thing, though. There's a lot of discontent,
Yep.
and people think by changing, leaders, maybe getting someone outspoken, that might change things. Whether it will or we won't, time will tell. But what I basically would recommend is just focus on, yourself, your family.
Yep.
Make sure that you're protected in a good situation come what may, so that regardless of the economic situation in the future, you can live the life that you become accustomed to.
Exactly right. And you can do that through goldmoney.com. You can do it through bitgold.com. And I would, again, encourage everyone, if you haven't yet picked up a copy of The Money Bubble, What to Do Before It Pops, by Mr. Turk and by John Rubino. Gosh, buy two copies, one for yourself and one to give away to somebody. With the stock market going down, some folks are starting to wake up. It's a great book to share with someone as well. James, I want to thank you for all your time today. It's been just extraordinarily valuable, like I said. And hopefully we can do this again sometime soon.
Yeah, I'd like to do that again. Thanks, Craig.
All right, my friend. Have a great rest of your day.